Alors,
Good morning.
Howdy, folks. I was trying desperately to get that Teams invite off of the event. I feel like it confuses me 100% of the time. I'm not sure how successful I was, but how's everybody doing?
Halfway between Monday and Friday.
That sounds about right. We've been wrestling with data import for like a week and a half, trying to get it to get some records into our system. That's been exciting. So Charlotte and I, mostly Charlotte, and I just kind of sat on the channel, but reached out to Mike Gorrell, and he said that he might have some availability this morning to join in the last half of the meeting. So I was thinking maybe I'm open to other suggestions, but I was thinking maybe a good use of our time would be to spend the first half of the meeting looking at his document and maybe coming up with some specific questions that we might have for him when he gets here. I thought that might be a good approach. What are y'all's thoughts?
So, Jeremy, for my part, I actually helped him author that a bit. And so I've been over the document probably four or five times with Mike and Kirsten. So I don't know if I have any questions per se. I think I understand it pretty well, but the all I guess is it our intention to try to harmonize our proposal with his, or are we looking to differentiate them?
I think this has been mentioned a lot. I think that it would be good if we could harmonize between what it is that we're proposing and what he's proposing. I think there's certainly some opportunities to do that. I guess I'd like to be really clear in my own mind about where that harmonization can happen, and
I definitely also think it would be the strongest document if it's harmonized. Definitely. One of the things we touched on last week was this to include a description or a paragraph about how the community-driven development team was to collaborate with if to do work in one of the EPAM team's code where they are the tech leads or you can say the owner, the development team which owns that given code. And I think that needs to be a bit fleshed out, not so much, not only to set the guidance for how the community-driven development team is to work, but also for, you can say, the module owner development team to know how to work together, collaborate with other teams working in their code. And I talk of experience. While
Yeah, that.
index data has done or are doing work in other teams' code. So it's just that we kind of it would be good to have some wording, some framing that is something to kind of have established around that team.
So it sounds, let me make sure I'm hearing you right. Charlotte, it sounds like you're suggesting that when, because community, if we do roll out a model for community-driven development, it is most likely going to constitute some sort of development team working in modules that they didn't initially author or have ownership over. And so it would be a good idea for us to have explicit policies in place for what developers should do when they find themselves working in code that is, for lack of a better word, owned by another team.
Yeah, I'd say for the work we are doing right now for Clemming, we have a paper work because here we are working. Clemming is this team we have together with the National Lab of Sweden. Here we have they set up some guidelines or some expectations also from the owning team on how we are to work with them. And I have you can say a work document on that. And I'm happy to share that for you as an example on how that is formalized for our given team. But it's just, I think we shouldn't be that exact, but we kind of should describe that we know the community-driven development team will operate in a landscape where other teams can be owner of the code. Or have the responsibility of the code. They are not owners, of course. It's working in open source, but they
Well,
are.
in some cases they may be, right? They may actually have the repository or control the repository where the code is stored. I think the issue to not get too specific would be my concern around getting too specific with this is that we might end up scaring people away from participating because they feel like they're going to have to get locked into someone else's development practices. So,
True, true. It's not easy.
no.
That might, well, I mean, that might, having some kind of codified expression of what's expected from people kind of uniformly across the board might mitigate that a little bit, just because you wouldn't necessarily feel like you'd be encountering something new necessarily each time you hop into a new development. Like you might know what to expect a little bit better if the way in which you contribute to other people's code bases is standardized a little bit. This feels like it's getting into technical council territory, though. And I see someone from the technical council has their hand up, so.
Well, I do, but not on that. I mean, I agree with Charlotte's point, and it's fantastic to come up with a document for that as someone who's contributed to UI inventory a bunch. It would be great to have some formalized guidelines for that. But I'm trying to tie that in to what I thought people were saying a few minutes ago about for today, the focus being on talking about the overlap and differences between the development initiative proposal process and the MicroL doc. Forgive me for forgetting the name, because the document that Jeremy put together doesn't doesn't well, it doesn't assume any particular team is doing the work. It doesn't assume that the team doing any particular work is not the team that happens to own that module. It's doing an RFP and then figuring out a contractor to do the work, and it might be that the team doing the work is the team that owns the module anyway. It might also not be. So I'm not disagreeing with anything Charlotte's saying, but if what we wanted to talk to Mike about was the commonalities, and if, as to Charlotte's point, our goal should be to create as much commonality as possible, then I think one of the important points is to identify the differences and whether those differences matter to us or not. Are they differences of we just happen to write up the same idea separately and so it looks different? Or are they differences because we intentionally had a different intent than the other proposal? In one of my Slack messages a couple of weeks ago, I had outlined some of the differences I saw or some of the points of overlap, but I don't know whether those were intentional differences or not. And I think, as I said last week, when we end up talking about this at community council, I'm not saying this is Monday, but whenever we end up talking about this at community council, it seems like the most important thing that our group will be able to contribute is what those intentional differences are and where we think that there should be changes made to Mike's proposal.
Jetzt bei Ihnen kommunizieren, I also think that Mike's paper explicitly doesn't foresee any plans or any rules of how to handle situations where there are different teams that do maintenance and functional development. So, and I think this for the community driven development team, this will be a problem. I think all over the development doesn't necessarily involve the community team. It will come up. There will be problematic situations, I think. And I think definitely we should have some idea how such situations can be handled. So I think at least it will be difficult to handle maintenance if or to get someone to pay for maintenance, as everyone else can just come and inject some new functionality that has to be maintained then as well, without any control. It just isn't you can't, it's not predictable anymore how much a module would or an app or cost inject new functionality. I think that's a big problem, and it's true for the development team, but for any other development and meeting teams as well.
Yeah, I do think Mike's document addresses maintenance more directly than my own, for sure. Martin, would you mind muting? You got somebody talking in the background. Thank you so much. So I think that, when it comes to maintenance, Mike's document, explicitly calls it out in multiple places as like being something that is like it's needed as part of one of these development efforts to, for maintenance to be kind of how, like how maintenance is going to be handled to be spelled out specifically. I think that the DIP proposal probably could and should include something like that, or at least it call out the fact that it doesn't exclude planning for maintenance. So whatever proposal is put forward, could include a maintenance model. But then what I don't like about it is that kind of encourages the maintenance model to be hashed out for every single development effort. And it does seem like it would be good if whatever strategy we use for maintenance was maybe more standardized across. I don't know, maybe it's not a good thing. I just think that that's probably one of the implications of that. If maintenance is being proposed on a per initiative basis, then you have the possibility for more variability in how maintenance is conducted. Maccabee?
Yeah, that's an example to me of an explicit difference between the two proposals, that the contribution network proposal envisions the majority of the community, the centrally funded money for this going towards maintenance, as opposed to for the DIP process, it's not even discussed currently. And even if we added a section on how maintenance would be in some of the complications, it still remains a philosophical disagreement with that other proposal as an example of something that's either intentional or not.
Sure. Charlotte?
Yeah. So way back in the earlier days of the core functional team, that we had a kind of a rules of thumb that we would spend 40% on bug fixes and 60% of the team's work on new development. And you can say, you can maybe do something similar, that you say, this portion of the time will be earmarked to maintenance. This portion of the development time for towards a given flower release will be spent on enhancements, because enhancements can also be, you know, just small features that has been just annoying for the libraries to deal with for 5, 7 years or something, and would be an extremely relief if finally that work could get done. So I don't think define that as maintenance, but it is kind of, you know, in some cases we are dealing still with very much a thin red implementation, and that given app module has never really been finished the work on it.
Okay, that's really interesting. So it sounded like what you're saying is what you're saying, that if organizations are able to fund development kind of based on, you know, if there's mechanisms in place for them to initiate development, that they will be likely to initiate development on maintenance related it, you know, issues, because that's the needs that the community has. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Now I get unsure if that is, but yeah, I get unsure a little bit. I'm
Okay.
just thinking that there should also be some room for doing some of these enhancements the six has asked for so
Okay.
long.
All right. I see. Yeah. So I guess it's that, you know, like with the DIP proposal, I can imagine a group, you know, getting together and saying, you know, the development proposal that we're putting forward is a maintenance contract for this module or something like that. I feel like it could be used to engage in maintenance development practices. But then again, you know, what are the implications there? One of the things I've heard EBSCO people say often is that Folio is a market-driven product. And I'm sure there is some truth to that. And it does seem like, you know, if we put this together and we don't require maintenance, that and we just kind of leave it to the market to decide, like, you know, when people decide they want to fund maintenance, then it will happen. And it's not something that's intentionally planned on, or kind of if we don't force the community's hand. Then, if it does happen, then it would prove the point that, you know, the market wanted maintenance, and so that's what happened. And if it doesn't happen, if people are not are not putting their money towards maintaining Folio, then I suppose people can sit back and say, well, you know, I guess they didn't really want to maintain it. That's not really where the will of the community was. I don't know. Part of me feels like it's prudent to put some guidelines on that, you know, to make sure that we don't make foolish decisions as a community. I don't know. It's an interesting question, Jen.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I think this comes back to defining what you mean by maintenance. Like, the market depending on what kind of maintenance, what you mean by maintenance is going to act differently. I think a lot of us using Folio have gotten used to just tolerating the things that are wrong with it. So if you're expecting people to say, well, I'm going to leave Folio because I can't reorder items, and then that's going to cut, like, that's probably not going to happen. On the other hand, if we aren't doing maintenance to keep things secure, that's not something a library that's going to cause people to leave potentially, but it's also something that no library is going to necessarily say, I'm going to pay to be the one to keep Folio secure. They're going to expect whoever is doing their hosting to do that as part of that. And I think that's a little bit where we, to me, it feels like we're trying to fight against the market by funding things through the community or subsidizing maintenance instead of leaving it up to the people making the money off of it, right? Like, if EBSCO is making the money, they have a market motivation to do maintenance, by whichever term, and, you know, potentially including their customers, like, getting mad and wanting items fixed or something. But I just think lumping everything into maintenance makes it even harder to talk about how the market's potentially going to act.
It is interesting. My just anecdotal observations, at least in the last couple of years, have been that if I were to diagnose EBSCO's perspective on where the market is going or what the market pressures are, it has been to grow their customer base through adding features. It's not that maintenance hasn't happened, but it is certainly the case that our maintenance windows have shrunk, and the upgrade cycle does feel quick. So,
but what,
yeah.
Are we just talking about adding features as being part of maintenance?
Yeah, I mean, on like older apps, or like kind of finishing out features on older apps, you know, if things were kind of half realized. It is the case that there are pockets of Folio that just don't get a lot of attention, I guess.
Right. And I mean, I guess if you're talking about like Library of Congress, yeah, they got a contract to build a bunch of stuff for them. But they have a lot of us other customers who they never build anything for.
Sure. Martin?
Yeah. First of all, short, I think building new functionality can be can sometimes be maintenance. For example, if you implement, let's say, two-factor authentication or so, this is new maybe new functionality, but it may be needed for maintenance, so to speak, because it otherwise the system wouldn't be usable anymore because of some other discoveries of some regulations or whatever, or if you implement some kind of new version of some interfaces or whatever, that needs to be done just because Otherwise, the system wouldn't be usable anymore. So I think this can be seen as maintenance if you want to. I wanted to add also that I agree that with Jen that it depends on what you think of is maintenance. And also, I also think that it depends on, on product itself. I mean, what you see as the product or the core of the product, paying, who has to pay for maintenance depends on how deep or how central some functionality is, or in our case, maybe some modules or apps are, I think. This is an open source product, even if EBSCO says it's marketplace driven or market driven. But you have to come up with some modern product at first before you can sell it. I mean, and there has to be some rudimentary product, I think, that you can offer, that you can advocate. And you have to do the work for this kind of work. You have to do first. I mean, this is not. I mean, and Folio is not owned by EBSCO. It's owned by the Open Library Foundation. So I think maybe for some core product, the maintenance, that is having an up to date product, is. In my opinion, has to be done by the Open Library Foundation, that more or less sells. I mean, it doesn't sell it, but who promotes the product or owns the product. And vendors like EBSCO, they just can, I don't know if they say it correctly in English, they can resell it maybe, or work on it, but the core product has to be is part of Open Library Foundation, and they should try to have a good product and have to do the maintenance.
Yeah, it's sounding, and I know Stephen, you've talked about this quite a bit. It's sounding like what you're saying, Martin, is that for centrally funded maintenance, it would be good to have a concept of what aspects of Folio are kind of considered core aspects of Folio. Is that what you're saying? And that like those parts of Folio should be funded from centralized funds?
Yeah. So, I mean, more or less, I mean, the Jen said it depends on who pays for it, depends on how you define maintenance. I mean, I think this is what Jen basically said. And I wanted to say it also depends on what you think the core product is.
That's a really good point. And yeah, like I said, Stephen has talked a lot about a need to like really identify, what aspects of Folio are considered kind of core. I don't want to put words in your mouth, Stephen, but...
Well, I don't think anybody really bought into it, Jeremy, I'll be honest. I had this idea, and I pitched this at the DC Summit, where we, very much narrow the scope around what governance was meant to address. And we would create some pretty rigid expectations around code quality and stability and maintenance, et cetera. And the project would focus on those core elements. And the rest of the ecosystem could be dealt with in a more laissez-faire fashion with some loose governance in the community. I don't think anyone else saw that vision. So, I mean, I still think it's a good idea. I just don't think that anyone else is really on board with it.
My intuition tells me that you might get people nodding along with the general idea, but then when you start to like draw those boundaries, that's where you're going to probably have a lot of different opinions.
Yeah, and that's where the councils would have to be very specific about what they meant by the core product, right? I feel like, for example, just to give you a more concrete way of looking at this, I felt like if we had had something like that in place, Eureka could not have happened the way that it did. That part of the product would have been very, very closely guarded by the community's processes, and no one could just kind of single-handedly kind of jump in and start rewriting the platform on which the system runs without a lot of hurdles to go through. But anyway.
Yeah, there's so much that could be said about that. I mean, I won't get started on that because I start talking about that, we won't be talking about any of the stuff we're supposed
to. No, I understand. I'm just saying that was my answer to how do we make this sure this doesn't happen again. But
I see Mike has joined us. Hi, Mike. Thank you so much for popping over from one meeting to another.
My pleasure. It's my fourth meeting today already. So,
man,
wow.
I think you could call it a day after this one.
I got another meeting after this, but that's okay.
Oh, boy. Well, just to kind of catch up on where we were, what we had intended to do, as usually happens with this group, we shift it pretty philosophical, I think. But what we were intending to do was kind of go through your document in preparation for you showing up to kind of prepare some questions. And in general, we would like to dialogue with you about what you're proposing and how it might interface. And I think ideally maybe harmonize with some of the ideas that we've been kicking around here in this group. So in order to do that, I guess you would need to be familiar to some extent with some of the ideas that we're talking about in this group. Have you gotten a chance at all to look at that DIP document, which I notice has some really serious formatting issues that I need to address?
I don't know if I've seen the latest, but I do know I read it earlier. And I feel like the CDD idea and the idea that I've sort of championed of the Folio contribution network fit like kind of hand in glove in some ways, because the Folio contribution network is trying to solve a handful of problems, one of which is, community funding for a development team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think they are complementary for sure.
Yeah, the scope of what you've thrown out there is certainly much, much larger. And I think my intuition is exactly as you said, that it feels like the overlap between what we have put out there and what you're talking about is specifically on the funding piece of things. And what we've talked about hasn't really expanded into a lot of the other areas that you address in your document.
Right. Yeah. My document is big and wild and wielded and unwieldy.
It's inspirational. You like kicked a bunch of anthills. It's great.
Yeah. Right. Let's see if we can get something done.
So one of the things we have discussed is also what is the scope of this development team? If we have a name team, or it might even be that it is also the community funding some of the already established development team, the EPAM team's example giving, to do development on, let's just mention tags, if that's, because that's a small, but that it's not, it's just used as an example. And we have discussed maintenance and how much maintenance how much of the time and money should be earmarked for maintenance, and how much should it also include feature enhancements, because we do need to be kind of realistic about that. Several of the existing apps are still very in an early state. Thin thread implementation are not living up to standard functionality as seen in the commercial projects.
Yep.
Yeah, That's true, Mike. Would you mind, talking to us? We've actually a big portion of the conversation before you arrived has centered around maintenance and what exactly is entailed by maintenance and how your document handles the concept of maintenance. Would you mind talking us through
Sure.
that from
So,
your perspective?
yeah, so the document, the idea is I'm going to give you the 3-minute overview of the whole thing first. So the idea is that you need to have Folio needs a way for development organizations to get matched up with organizations that need some development done. And so there's a developer marketplace concept that's described. There's a the notion of we have to identify funding streams for development through the community. And so there's a section on like where does the funding happen and how would the funding get moved from membership dues, for example, or some individual organization paying identifying that they have a chunk of change to pay for development. So there's that. And also a notion of pooling. So libraries can get together and fund, you know, five libraries can fund something instead of just a single. And then how do we deal with maintenance? And so maintenance is complicated. It's a complicated thing in order to predict because the idea that I have is basically there's a organization that says I'm willing to do some maintenance. And an organization says we need to do maintenance, and now you have to come to agreement on how much money is transpired or transferred from one to the other. And the idea that I threw out was that we come up with some sort of pointing system so that modules end up with a number of points. And so you say that it's a relative way to, as I'm sure many of us are aware, points relative way to sort of size work. Also, though, corresponding points to a certain number of points to being a full-time person. And so 100 points is equal to a person. So you can say this module takes two people to maintain or half of a person to maintain, that kind of thing. So that's the overall general concept. Then it sort of chucks the hard work down the road and says we have to get together, have to get a group of people together in order to figure out like, how many points any given module is, as an example. And it suggests that we reach out to product owners and developers and go back and do some analysis and say, okay, well, out of the work that we did last quarter, last year, last release, this much of it was maintenance and that took us, you know, this many points or something like that. So it's like I said, it's a broad document and it has some ideas in them. In it, and none of the ideas have really been, I would say, tested too strictly, and so they may not all be good ideas, you know. But those are the ones that I kind of kicked out there. Go ahead, Jen.
I with so I guess Mike, we were talking a little bit about quote the market before, and so I guess stepping back, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about going with a model like this versus saying, you know, EBSCO is making money off of hosting Folio. Therefore it makes sense for them to take that money and invest it into Folio maintenance so that they can keep selling Folio, or Index Data is hosting Folio customers, so it makes sense for them to invest money in continuing to be able to sell Folio versus, and so there's sort of a direct connection between the people making money and the people investing money versus making it more abstract, that people are putting money into a pot who are libraries who are already putting membership money in. We know the membership money that we collect is nowhere near what, say, EBSCO spends.
Yeah. So,
Yeah, so I guess just that step back, could you talk about that?
for sure. So, I have one thing that I'll say about the proposal or the document that I put together, but then I want to circle back to us hosting providers. So, one, it's been clear to me that some organizations are just going to assume maintenance responsibility for some modules. for different reasons. And so there's a concept in this document about module adoption. And so if there's just hypothetically say there's 100 modules that need some maintenance, the community may only need to come up with funding for 20 of them because 80 of those modules may be adopted. And so, for example, EBSCO has said something to the effect of, we have contractual obligations to make sure the folio is maintained. And so one could look at that and think, okay, well, EBSCO is going to maintain all the folio, so we're all good with that. Many of us don't think that that's the right way to, the right approach. But anyway, the point being that EBSCO has already stated that they plan to maintain many modules, certainly community modules, and they certainly will maintain modules that are specific to EBSCO. And so anyway, adoption is something that I think is a key concept for me. EBSCO and Index Data are commercial providers, and the fees that I'll speak for Index Data, and then I'll speak for EBSCO because I've talked to EBSCO, but I'll speak more strongly about Index Data. So when we charge somebody for our services, we're trying to pay for the people that help them and for our AWS infrastructure, and hopefully we cover our costs. We're not, meaning most of the cost of our service goes into delivering that service. And so there's not a lot of extra for us to go maintain, pay to maintain Folio. Having said that, we're a company of about 24 people, of which Folio is about, I would say, 60 to 70% of our business. So let's say 60, because we have a pretty decent reshare business too. And we end up donating. People log our time, right? We end up donating over a person, so that's at least 5% of our company to Folio activities. And so EBSCO is in a similar boat to us in that when they charge a fee to a customer, they're trying to cover their costs for the people that are dealing with that customer. They're trying to cover their cost of AWS infrastructure, and they're hopefully trying to make a little bit of money to pay for the things that they donate. They are donating. They continue to donate at a level that, as far as I know, exceeds their revenue or is at least close to their revenue. And so EBSCO is, sort of, giving a lot of money already to the community. Nobody's really tied that I know of, has tied that to, has put those numbers out there in a transparent way so that everybody could look at them and say, oh, geez, they spent, $7.9 million and they got $8.2 million in revenue or whatever that is, whatever those numbers might be. I don't know if that was helpful.
Yeah, that helps a lot. And of course, libraries are also donating a lot of time on top of their membership fees. So
100%.
definitely. I guess specific to the proposal, one thing I don't think I saw around the sponsorship was the idea of sunsetting, which is essentially saying, if we've got 80 modules, 60 get adopted, 20 don't. A mechanism for the community to just say, well, these five, nobody has ever supported course reserves, and we as a community are just going to decide to retire course reserves. Or to say, folks, yeah, to, I guess, give a warning and say, we're going to retire this if libraries or someone doesn't step up, because we can't do everything.
Yeah, you're right. I don't think I talked about that specifically in the document. Although I think I did put in there something about some sort of annual review of the modules and understanding their maintenance needs. I think it's a given. The scenario that you painted is absolutely correct that at some point a module is going to be left without anyone who wants to maintain it. And then collectively we'll have to figure out like, what do we do about that?
I think I'm sorry to jump ahead of some hands, but just real quick, I just wanted to say I think the psychology for the community of having that be explicit is would be have a really positive impact on participation with maintenance because, if the reality of us not attending to these modules is really apparent to us, that means they might go away. It might motivate people to get more involved in these things and. Go ahead, Charlotte. You're muted.
Yeah. A tiny comment regarding cost reserves. Then, when deciding to maybe put a module down, and then it cannot be the majority who are deciding that, because in the example of cost reserves here, all the EBSCO customers has this E reserve X something. I don't recall the branding name, which can be proposed for the EBSCO customers. But what about all the rest? What about the index data customers who want a cost reserve app? What about the self-hosting libraries who also very much need? And same, it's a cost reserve. It's typical US libraries who is most interested in that, and not really that many European libraries are using it, at least for now.
So I will also just jump in and say, like, this is one of the dangers of abstracting it from the market. Like the idea that we have to keep paying for it because a few people want it, but somehow those few people who want it are not the ones responsible for paying for it. That for some reason that needs to be shared. So maybe those people want it. Well, then they're really good candidates for sponsoring it. And if they're not willing to sponsor it, maybe they don't want it enough.
It's definitely the, I think, all right. Well, I'm gonna let Martin go. I have some thoughts on that, but Martin, go for it.
I just wanted to say that I mean, sunsetting modules is, I think, is an important idea, and I also think that you have to, maybe you have to think more fine granular sunsetting functionality, because we now have a lot of special functionality for maybe just a few libraries that is implemented into the normal or on, into the normal modules. Like for example, I think for example, what I saw recently is that at least parts of the functionality for the floating collections is in mod circulation. I don't know how many libraries will use that this feature. There are definitely libraries, but once those libraries use it, don't want it anymore or can't afford it anymore, how should we treat such functionality? Can just this functionality be sunsetted without circulation being sunsetted? That's, I think that's an important question. It also, I think it also holds for example, German reminder fees, or I don't know who uses, for example, the ECS functionality, which I think is a big thing. And once no one wants to use it anymore, you just can't say, and we shouldn't say, okay, now it's in, and we have to use it forever because it's in the module that is going to be maintained forever.
To invoke the abstraction that Mike's proposal introduces when it comes to like point values for kind of to represent maintenance burden for a specific module, it does seem like being intentional about doing things like sunsetting functionality in a module to kind of control the weight of that module when it comes to the maintenance burden, would be a smart idea. Kind of be forward thinking, like, do we really need to keep this feature set in this module around, or is it just contributing to kind of o overhead for the module? And maybe we, get rid of that and make it more lean. In regards to one of the things that popped into my head, Jen, as you were talking about the kind of the dangers of abstracting away from kind of natural market forces, I think that when you framed things earlier saying, well, hosting providers like IndexEdge or EBSCO, are at least potentially profiting from Folio, so that money should be reinvested in the maintenance. There's certainly some truth to that, and we definitely want Folio to be something that is profitable for the people involved. or it's not going to continue to exist. So part of the sustainability of Folio as a product is its profitability. On the flip side, though, I think one of the things that one of the reasons why community-driven development has become such a topic is because I do think that to some degree, the community watching the course of development that has been kind of solely driven by, the financial interests of private organizations has sometimes gone in directions that the community, like when we kind of do a gut check on, like, well, what do we want to see happen with this? It's not necessarily moving in the direction that the community wants to see it move in. And then maybe things that we do want to see developed are not getting the attention that we would like to see. And so rather than just kind of pushing on these commercial entities to kind of do what we want them to do, I think that we're trying to kind of pull some, not all. I think it would be a mistake if we pulled everything out of the market-driven approach, but to pull some section of it out that gives us a little bit more direct control over some of the development that happens, with the acknowledgement of the fact that we can't do that if we're not willing to put our money where our mouth is. Resources have to be there to do that. Jen.
Yeah, that's all I was going to say is that, this was not originally set up as like a lyricist thing, right? Where like the money's going to a foundation and that's writing grants and getting money and doing things. Like it hasn't been set up in that centralized, we're bringing in, X millions of dollars a year kind of way. So it's a big shift to switch to centralized funds.
I'm going to point out another difference, and it is related specifically to what you just said, Jen. Another difference, I think, between the proposal that we have in the DIP process and the and Mike's proposal is that the funding model that's being presented in the DIP process is kind of just-in-time funding. It's like it's initiative-specific funding. And I like that idea, but it doesn't address this idea of centralized funds or membership dues. I think that it could be expanded to talk about kind of a central pot and like maybe how specific initiatives might be able to propose that the central pot be utilized to some degree in a specific development initiative. Mike, remind me, does your document depend on centralized funding for 100% of the development, or does it allow for kind of earmark specific contributions for specific development efforts?
Oh, it definitely allows for earmarked targeted investment.
Okay.
Yeah, both for new stuff and for maintenance.
I think both things are probably important to expose. I think it would be quite literally like leaving money on the table if you didn't kind of offer both funding models. Is my intuition, Jen?
Sorry, since we were getting back to maintenance, I wanted to ask Mike, when he says the word maintenance, what he's thinking of.
Maintaining I guess I can't do that. Effort related to ensuring functionality continues to work given other environmental changes that might have happened, and or fixing things so that they work like they should have worked, or that they were thought to have worked. So I'm trying to exclude the creation of new functionality is basically.
Okay, so
And
everything except new functionality.
yes, is yeah, it's what I think of.
I do
Yeah, I
think.
would agree with that, Mike. Just to endorse that, I think that when we talk about maintenance, we definitely should not have a not conflate new functionality or new features or enhancements with keeping what exists viable.
I feel like this is a certain, like every term in technology, this is overloaded. But I think the differentiating between the idea of capabilities and functionality or features, capabilities and features maybe, is a good delineation to help with seeing where maintenance is happening. Because as Martin pointed out, there are certain times where, in order to ensure continued functionality, you have to add additional capabilities. Like, for instance, if security system, the security of the environment is demanding new capabilities of a software that's running, you might have to add those in order for it to continue to run. And I would consider that sort of thing, even though on the face it might look a little bit like feature additions, I would kind of consider that, maintenance. But that's where it gets a little fuzzy, I think.
I think, I mean, we had put it, or we have it at the moment with Eureka. I think that the example also that module maintainers or developers had to change their modules and the permissions they defined for modules in order for them in Eureka to work. I think there had to be some permissions had to be defined in a certain way. I think there was last year there was a call to all developers. So for a maintainer, this is something the maintainers have to do, because if they wouldn't change their permissions, the modules wouldn't work on Eureka. I mean, before I had this very abstract example of the implementation, which we have come maybe from outside, but we have to have it in within the folio environment as well.
That's a great example. Do y'all, I know we have 3 minutes left, but there's a question that if I don't ask it, I'm gonna kick myself. So I'm just gonna do it anyway. But are you familiar, Mike, with some of the work that Caitlin Stewart has been doing regarding prioritization dashboards for the Product Council?
No, I'm not.
Okay, so she has been kind of championing an effort to allow the SIGs to kind of identify their priorities and consolidate those into a single presentation that allows us to kind of see what the top development priorities are for the community as a whole. And I think that's a really appropriate use of the Product Council's time. That seems very like in the pocket for the sort of thing that they need to be bringing forward. You're just encountering this idea for the first time, and we got 2 minutes, so you're off the hook for being super profound or anything. But do you see an idea like that having a place in your proposed approach?
Well, yeah, I think if there's a pot of community money for that's targeted or earmarked for new development, that's general, So the idea of the Folio Contribution Network is that you can target funds like, hey, me and two other universities want to have this thing built. That's one thing. Or we take, just as a community, we say we're going to take 37% of dues and put that towards new development. Someone's got to choose what gets developed. And so that what you're talking about sounds like a good mechanism to at least identify the things that are most wanted.
Okay. Well, folks, we're pretty much at time. Mike, thank you so much for talking about this. And I guess, is it next Monday that we're going to be having a similar conversation with the community council?
Yeah, it'll be interesting because it's an hour meeting, and there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it'll take a ton of time to talk through what we have written up. So, you'll probably get the lion's share of that discussion.
All right. Well, thanks for inviting me, guys. And I joined the channel too, so I'll be able to
Okay.
see activity.
Fantastic. Take it easy,
All
folks.
right. Adios.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.